Hello, and welcome to Minute 49 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Tom.
And I'm Rob.
And joining us again this Thursday from the Marriage Fit Podcast in the Wilder Ride, Alan Sanders. Welcome back, Alan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back. Loving it. I've written only 3 tick marks down, so I'm assuming I still have a few more days, or are you going to kick me out early? I don't know which way it's supposed to happen here.
We haven't decided yet either. So 49 starts with Hiltz running through the rest of his plan, and it ends with Ramsey giving a nod to Roger. So this plan that he has, the logistics of it seem incredibly questionable to me. So they're digging 3 feet down. You figure you're digging a 3-foot-ish wide hole by probably, figure about a 3 by 18-inch hole to get through, 3-foot by 18-inch hole to get through. And you're not, how hard is the dirt? Because it seems like it should be substantially harder dirt to get through with very little tools.
That's what I couldn't figure out. Is that what he came to a conclusion of in the cell? That the dirt is going to have some sort of a softer sand-like quality after a certain number of feet? Because it's like we were supposed to be led to his sudden recognition of his plan.
Yeah, that's what they want us to see.
So I don't know what the soil you're going to have like a geologist on or somebody who is a scientist in that area. But to me, that's all I could hearken back to is he must have been soft enough, almost sand-like, where the 3 feet would give him just enough below the surface to be able to be hidden without, causing a collapse, and yet still soft enough that they could dig by hand.
I mean, I guess. I flash back to every time I've had to dig holes in the ground that, some 3 feet, some not as deep, and I'm using a spade, and it's still a pain to do, much less trying to do it with my hand. But
right.
Just seems questionable, and I feel like Ramsey, Roger, and Mac all seem to have my same opinion of it. Because they just look at him like, what are you doing?
Well, I saw it differently, which ironically we'll get to, I think, at the end of the minute. Because they're going through this super complexity. We're going to go 30 feet down. We're going to dig 3 tunnels. One's going to go this way. One's going to go that way. Then we're going to have a parallel tunnel. And I was like, here's what we're going to do. Blind spot. We're going to go down 3 feet. Thing. And they're looking at him like, did we just go through a ton of effort where we could have just done the same thing?
All right, I've been silent. You want to burst both of your bubbles right now?
Might as well.
Of course.
This really did happen. This is one of the few things in the script that is based on reality. There was a New Zealander, W, by the name of Piglet Lamont. Piglet obviously was not his given name, where he actually did this. He had it was known as a mole idea, which what it did was it greatly shortened the distance necessary to tunnel. And basically what they did was is they started digging around one of the huts, which was just a few yards from the wire. And what his idea was is that they would dig 7 feet deep. And then they would get inside and they'd cover the entrance and they'd start they dug 20 feet on and little by little and they were one of the things that the movie obviously spares us is that all the digging was really done in the nude. So I'm quite glad that they don't do that here. they let us see everyone wearing their clothes and soiling their clothes. Piglet and I think 2 others, what they did was is they really did this. They went 7 feet down, pushed the dirt behind them. It took them 20 feet. They started tunneling and they made holes along the way. Basically, after they were in, someone covered up the hole and they buried them alive, basically. What he ended up doing was is during the night, they tried going through. they ran into some problems along the way. What they basically say here is that Lamont was in front. The other 2 behind him were shoving the sand back behind them, and they were filling up the tunnel as they were moving along. They made it about 4 feet out of the, how many feet did I say? They needed about 20 feet. Right. So they made it about 4 feet, and then they started sticking up the poles in order to have breathing holes. What happened was is that they were very concerned that they'd actually run out of air and they would all suffocate and pass out. And basically all the other prisoners were watching from a hut nearby. They were looking to see, and at night there was steam coming out of all of those holes that they were making, and they were scared that the Germans would actually catch and see the steam come out of those and get them. At some point they had watches with them, but because of all the sand their watches stopped. And they weren't able to light matches because they didn't have any room there. And they didn't realize how much time went by, and they started seeing that there was light and that it was daylight. And they ended up staying there the entire day, which surprises me that nobody noticed, but apparently this is what happened. And they waited till they saw that it was dark again, and then they waited a little longer just to be sure. And then they went up a few feet, and they actually made it outside of the wire. They made it about 8 miles before they got picked up by somebody. As stupid as this whole idea sounds, and Max says it, I think he says it tomorrow.
Yes.
Or maybe he says it today, yeah. Three guys actually did it. and it worked.
I am more incredulous about how long it took. And the fact that they were willing to stay buried alive for an entire day and go through the night, and that they were able to make it out successfully and get 8 miles before picked up. That's like mind blown. That'd make a movie all by itself right there.
Yeah.
Correct.
Wow. Well, and this is where, again, I assumed that their expressions around him were sort of almost self-chastising. Did we overcomplicate our own plan? You know, and that's how I looked at it. Because, and we're going to find out tomorrow at the end of the scene that, you know, one of the guys makes a comment to that effect. But I don't know that you would have been successful with a 250-person mass evacuation that way.
No, I think someone would have killed someone else on the way.
Yes, this is very much a limited person job. So,
yeah.
Once we get the, you know, story and the weird looks, you know, we don't get too much dialogue about it, but just the way Ives and Hiltz are acting towards each other, we kind of see the relationship that they built up next to each other in the cooler, and how Ives is now very much looking up to Hiltz, and Ives admits he's cracking.
Which that surprised me in itself. If he says that he's bloody close to bear happy, he says it. No one else says it, and they're still going to let him go. I mean, if someone tells me that you know, I don't know, I'm feeling suicidal, you know, but I'm going to go up on the roof just to get some fresh air. Wait a second, I'm going to be concerned. I'm not going to say, oh, you know what? Why not? Go ahead. So they seem to let them go a little too easily after that line. I mean, obviously, Hiltz and Ives are confident about their plan. There's no question about that here. They really believe it's going to work.
Right. But I saw it a little differently, not necessarily that he's cracking, because obviously he admits it. I think from Hiltz's perspective, that's giving him the desperation to pull it off. And the other guys are like, well, our plan's going to take a whole lot longer. Maybe it's best he doesn't, you know, go bonkers in here if he's got a chance to get out, rather than maybe do something that draws attention to us in here.
It's possible. But again, that when you look at the terminology of someone saying they're wire happy, that's a red flag.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that either. I think you can make
it. And it's also ironic when you talk about him being wire happy. Well, I think especially for people who know what's going to happen later on.
Either way, I think, you know, this is like, is Hamlet insane or is Hamlet really crafty? I think I can argue either way. I think the same thing here. Which doesn't make it a hole in the story. It just makes it interesting.
Right. It's true. You'll have to ask Shakespeare that when you have your conversation with him.
When I have my lunch? Nobody's gonna know that reference. Check out.
We're not even going to Susan's conversation, which also fits into this movie.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Should we explain that for people?
Well, maybe. If you go to the Marriage Fit and you check out episode episode 9, Managing the In-Laws, you might find out what we were talking about there.
Here, a plug for something that happened 6 months ago. There you go.
Yeah. Go way back. Start from the beginning. Go to the beginning. You can learn a lot.
Now, all right, I've been teasing this all week, so I'm not going to wait till tomorrow. I'm going to go for it now. So this is the trigger. When I heard the word wire happy, I said, okay, I want to see if there are different connotations for what wire happy is. So I started doing research on what the phrase wire happy is, and I actually came across an article that was written in 1948, and it was published in American Speech, which is the, I guess, a journal, in October 1948, volume 23, numbers 3-4. And it's an article written by Schmer Ashman called Kriege Talk, which it's a 7-page article that describes the jargon of POWs during World War II. Explains a hell of a lot. I mean, I was so shocked at a lot of these things that I came across here. I'm not going to obviously go through everything here, but one of the things that they say is that after POWs spent a lot of time together, they all started having this is a journal that deals with linguistics and language and stuff like that. So they're going to see how did being in a POW camp affect the language of these prisoners. And basically what they said was that the American and British prisoners, when they were together, they ended up forming jargon for many of the things that they dealt with along the way. I'll just give a few examples. A few weeks ago, Tom and I were discussing with Jim Keen. We came across the word Vorlager, and we had no idea what it was, and I couldn't find it. The Vorlager was actually a section of the camp where the Germans kept the supplies. So basically, the prisoners started using a lot of German words among themselves to explain different things that were going on in the camp. We mentioned earlier this week the word goon. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to figure out, okay, where did that come from? So this article, it's basically an American term that was an uncomplimentary description of labor toughs. And it usually refers to people low mental classification.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, the goons, these were derogatory terms that they were using, but it became uniform for both for prisoners, you know, Americans and Brits to start using these terminologies for the Germans that way. And they would actually refer to a lot of things in the camp by then also. They would, for instance, they would refer to things as the goon box. Do you ever know? You can probably easily guess what a goon box is. Anyone?
I assume it's the barracks for the guards.
Nope. Alan?
A goon box, huh? I have no idea.
Okay, goon box is the guard tower.
Okay, right? That makes sense.
All right. What's a tame goon? Goon.
Someone who's nice, like the guy that will come up later with...
Exactly. And someone who's friendly. Someone's friendly to the POWs. Okay, what's a ferret? What's the difference between a ferret and a goon?
Goon's going to be more, I think, heavy muscle, dumb, thick Neanderthal. A ferret who's maybe more squirrely, mousy, trying to maybe, I don't know, sneak up and do things or find things out, but they're not the brute squad. They're more like cunning.
Okay, you're very close. The ferrets, these were the guards whose job was to detect escape plots and tunnels. So they would refer to different jobs of the guards based on that. They'd have, you know, the men and the ferrets, which I've seen this movie dozens of times, and it never even dawned on me to think that there's a differentiation between a goon and a ferret. I thought that was just, okay, these are just derogatory terms of what you would call, you know, the enemy. You know, they I don't even use the word krauts here in the movie. I'm not sure.
You're right.
I don't recall hearing it. It's either goons or ferrets. Okay, what is a goon hole?
A goon hole? Hmm.
No idea.
Okay, yeah, it's a passage under the barracks that the Germans would dig up in order to hide there, in order to facilitate detection of escape tunnels and eavesdrop on conversations. Meaning that the Germans would dig up some of the ground and hide there in order to learn information from the prisoners.
Oh my God. I never even thought about maybe digging a tunnel underneath one of the main barracks and eavesdrop from underground.
I just have an image now of a German underneath the floor with a glass in the...
Exactly. That's awesome. Yeah. Just a few more.
Where two tunnels come right to each other.
Yes. Yes, exactly. A few more. Obviously, in many World War II movies, whether you're dealing with POW camps or concentration camps, you hear the term Appell. Do either one of you know what Appell is?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay, that is it's a German word for what the time that they would get all the prisoners together in order to count them. Basically, roll call.
Oh, muster.
But again, they would use the German phrases. Which is interesting that you know they would adopt these phrases to use them along the way. Another thing that this article mentions is the way that the prisoners would get information about what was going on outside, and this blew my mind away. Blew my mind. They would get information via the German news, and in some ways, it says that the average prisoner of war was probably better informed as to the progress of the war in Europe than were most people on the outside. Because they would get German news via newspapers and the radio. They would have secret radios, and they would listen to the BBC. But no one would actually believe the information on the BBC because the BBC would have too much propaganda. And
hold on.
One second. The BBC, the idea of the BBC news was to try to raise morale, and it lowered the morale of the POWs because they knew that what they were telling them on the BBC was not true based on what they were reading in the German papers.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding this. BBC was a bigger propaganda machine than whatever Hitler's Germany was pushing out.
I heard it differently. I heard that they would hear the German news, which of course is going to be slanted German, and because they were behind and captured, they wouldn't believe, they would think the BBC was blowing smoke and vice versa.
Okay. Exactly.
I mean, let's face it, you're not about to go on national radio and go, yeah, lost another battle. That Hitler guy seems to have his together.
Exactly.
don't know how well that would go over.
Correct. Another few golden parts of this article, which I obviously recommend anyone who's interested to find it and read this article, that they would actually, because all of these prisoners were shot down or captured or whatever it was, no one really wanted to hear everyone else's story of how they got caught. So they would refer to their origin story of how they got caught as a "there I was," and they would actually make fun of people who would go around persistently recounting their experiences because nobody wanted to hear it.
Right, all been through it.
Exactly.
How do you one-up somebody when you've all been shot down and captured?
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I'm gonna one-up you.
I was on a motorcycle. Wow. Actually, you can. You say I had my guitar with me. I had my trombone with me. I was able to take my tea set with me. You know, that's how you one up everyone. And the final thing that I found very, very interesting, which is something that this movie, because it was made, doesn't really deal with. And if it was made today, obviously it would deal with it. They basically said that most of the expressions that all of these POWs coined in camps, that none of them were obscene in origin. They said it could be because of the fact that there weren't any women around, so they didn't even try to bustle up what they were trying to say. They said that there was limited pornographic art and literature in the barracks, meaning that people weren't putting up dirty pictures and writing dirty limericks along the way. So I found that very interesting that, and this was an article that came out in 1948. So it was, you know, they interviewed the real people who made it out. So thank you everyone for waiting all week for hearing them.
Well, you started off saying, well, now that we're talking about being wire happy and phrases, I wanted to get into this article. Did you find out what wire happy actually means?
Ah, I actually thought I'd already said that. Yes, it says wire happy was known as definitely peculiar, which didn't really help me. It didn't explain what wire happy means,
right.
But it opened the door for this whole article.
I found
the wire happy aspect to be less impressive than the rest of the article.
Because I always heard of it is that some people, they kind of like go stir crazy, like when you're wire happy.
Exactly.
You're ready to go literally climb the barbed wire, and you don't even care if you get shot. You'd rather be shot in broad daylight trying to escape. You're done the subterfuge. You can't handle anymore. You're just ready. You crack up and you run to the wire, hence you're wire happy. Like you're going to wire.
That's right. That's exactly how I knew the phrase before. And again, that brings us back to why I think it's really stupid of Roger and Mac and Ramsey to actually let someone who says they're wire happy go. Or maybe they said, maybe we might as well let him go out this way as opposed to jumping, trying to climb the fence.
Yeah.
Maybe they said, okay, this is his only chance if he's really that wire happy.
I think that's the tone of the scene getting back to this minute is I think it's, they realize he's desperate and it's the last thread holding him together and he might as well let him go out on his own terms.
Yeah.
If he'd rather go out digging right now and not wait another second. And I think it's going to be kind of prescient for later. And, well, we'll get into it tomorrow.
Yeah. So I just want to thank you two for letting me go off on a tangent here with that information.
Well, thank God it's your show, because if it was mine, I'd be pissed off.
Don't worry, Rob. In a couple of weeks, I've got my tangent, and I can almost guarantee you it's going to be longer than yours. So
okay. No problem.
I feel bad for our guest that week.
I don't know anything about economics. Anything to say. Don't worry about it.
Hey, my last comment I'll just leave this with. It goes back to what I said yesterday. Steve McQueen's character, when he sort of like makes eye check with everybody, like, okay, like, can I go now? It's so different in style, delivery. He stands out like a sore thumb. Maybe that was the intent, but it's just, to me, it's almost comical. Like, you're wasting my time. I should be digging right now. Okay, can I go?
Yeah.
I mean, I love it. It just feels out of place.
Completely.
Yeah. No.
But it differentiates him. It makes him unique.
Mm-hmm. Rob, do you have anything else for today?
No, I think I tired you guys out.
Man, I love this. I said it earlier this week. The history, the origins. Yeah. I never even thought I was a history person until I became a little bit older and realized, oh, it's more than just memorizing dates and places and names. There's actual stories and people and they do things.
Yeah.
And you get to watch movies about it. to see how they mess up the truth.
the truth. Well, no, because then there's Braveheart, which just shatters it. But a whole different podcast.
Yeah, but I love Braveheart. It's still a fun movie.
Didn't say I didn't like the movie.
I'll a very quick side story. I have a friend of mine who works in our history museum. It's a Western art museum here in town, and he who wrote the screenplay for Tombstone, because he's a historian. He knows all about the story of Tombstone and Wyatt Earp and the whole Earp family. And as they were going through, at one point, the writer compressed four or five things and got something out of the wrong and Jim says to him, like, that it didn't happen that way. You know it didn't happen that way. He goes, right, but this is a movie, and at some point we're going to have to condense things and keep the audience interested.
Uh-huh.
Like, they knew full well they were changing some of the facts, but for the sake of the story, they realized, well, we're not going to sit in the theater for 13 hours and wait for the next winter. We're just going to compress it and go.
Man right. Who shot Liberty Valance. When the truth becomes, what is it? Truth becomes legend, print the legend. That's the line?
Yeah.
That's it. Yes. All right. Well, Alan, do you want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah, you know, I'll leave it very easy. We have a listeners group attached to Wilder Ride podcast, the Wilder Ride. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. But if you go to our Facebook page, the Wilder Ride, you know, facebook.com/ the Wilder Ride, go over there, click like, but more importantly, click the join group. We have a private listener group. That way, whatever's said in the group stays in the group. It won't clog your feed, or you won't have to feel embarrassed if you want to share something about your geek movie loves, whatever. We keep it all about entertainment, fun, music, nothing political, nothing religious. I mean, we're not trying to, there's nothing wrong if you want those discussions, but do that somewhere else. We just want to keep it a happy, fun place for people who love Gene Wilder or movies or entertainment. So we'd love for you guys to come join us in the Wilder Ride listeners group.
All right. Well, when you go join that group, go ahead and join our Facebook group, The Cooler. Otherwise, you can get in touch with us. We're on Twitter at GreatEscapeMXM. You can shoot us an email, thegreatminute@gmail.com, or you can check out our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.